In the Heights is a 2008 Broadway musical. It was written by Lin-Manuel Miranda and Kiara Alegria Hudiz. It was inspired by Miranda's life growing up in the Hispanic Manhattan neighborhood of Washington Heights and follows a circle of second-generation Latin immigrants as they face huge life changes. Miranda himself starred as Usnavi, the young bodega owner who is struggling with whether to return to the Dominican Republic. Just as his friends face their own conflicts, Nina returns home from Stanford for the summer, Benny is trying to advance his career, and Vanessa is trying to move downtown. My guest today is my sister Riley. Also, our conversation moves through this show pretty linearly, so if you don't want to know what happens, I recommend you stop before we talk about Act 2. I hope you enjoy our conversation about In the Heights. Hello, Riley. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So, what are we talking about today?
Today, we are talking about the musical In the Heights.
Now, I want to share a little anecdote before we get into the meat of this, and that's that this is the third season of Corner of the Sky, and Riley has had this show booked, like no one else was allowed to talk about it, since I came up with the idea for the podcast, and it has taken this long for her to actually do it.
Well, yeah.
I had to bring you to the city in which I live and then like force you to sit down and be like, I control your time right now, so we're going to record a podcast.
A little bit.
To be fair, that's what I do to most people. But no, let's get into this, though. So why did you pick In the Heights, and why are you so attached to not anyone else being allowed to talk about it?
So In the Heights was really the first musical I ever loved. It's still one of my favorites, and it's the first musical I saw on Broadway.
A lot of eyes in that sentence.
Yeah, well, okay. It's also the first musical Quinn saw on Broadway.
I think this was mentioned in the episode we did about Wicked that I recorded with my mom. But yes, In the Heights was the first show we saw on Broadway. Well, do you want to go ahead and tell the story of, like, how we discovered it?
I don't really remember.
Okay, Riley has no memory of this.
I was young.
Let me tell you a tale of the 2008 Tony Awards. So this was the first year that any of us watched the Tonys, and I'm pretty sure we started watching it this year because in 2007, Spring Awakening performs, and I think Mom was like, no. But we've seen the Tonys every year since 2008, like we being the children. And in 2008, In the Heights performed. And there were, you know, other shows happening, of course, but we fell in love with it. They performed a medley of different parts of 96,000 and the opening number In the Heights. And we became, I think, immediately obsessed with the show.
I think so, yeah. I remember we listened to the soundtrack pretty much constantly after that.
Yeah, I think we had divvied up parts. We did that sometimes where the three of us, like the two of us and our older brother, would decide who was singing what parts, and then it was standard across the whole show, which is weird because sometimes you would end up having conversations with yourself.
Often you would end up having conversations with yourself, yeah.
I don't remember whose part was whose, though. Do you?
I don't.
I'm sure we did it, though, because we did that a lot.
Yeah, we did that with Wicked and the Buffy musical episode.
The Buffy musical episode. Honestly, what a classic. What a true bastion of entertainment.
Probably the best musical episode ever.
We have a lot of feelings about Buffy, too. But yeah, so we... In 2008, that was 11 years ago now. So,
wow.
I was 11. You were
nine.
That's wild. This is not a show for 9-year-olds.
No, it's not.
Well, we didn't really get a lot of it. You were nine, and so our older brother would have been
14.
14 at that time, yeah. And just imagine in rural Maine, three white children rapping every single word to a musical about Washington Heights in New York City.
Yep.
I mean, we couldn't do the Spanish in it very well.
We still can't do the Spanish very well.
We've all taken Spanish since then, and still none of us can do the Spanish very well in this because it's very fast. But yeah, white children, every single word, or at least an approximation of the phonetic sound of every single word in this musical.
Yep.
So could you tell me a little bit about why, either then, if you remember, or now, why you love this musical?
Okay. Well, I know then I think it was just... I really liked sort of how the music sounded. It was new. It was interesting. It was something I hadn't really heard before. Now it's definitely a lot more plot-based. It's a very intense musical. And it has a lot of really... emotional plot lines and storylines, and I just really love listening to them all unfold and everything that happens, and it's just very personal and real.
I would definitely agree with that. Especially when we were listening to it as little kids, we didn't really understand a lot of it.
Yeah.
Like, we knew what was happening, but I don't think we understood emotionally why what was happening was such a big deal.
Definitely, yeah.
We were like, oh, that's nice. What a good song.
We were like, oh, no, she's having problems at school. Oh, no. And now
we're like, ah!
Yeah. You graduate college, I'm in college, and we're like, oh, no!
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I want to really get into this musical, and we don't usually do this, but I think for this episode, it would be cool to do, like, a track-by-track breakdown and sort of go through the soundtrack and talk about each song, or at least, like, the major songs throughout it. But first, I want to talk a little bit about the background of this musical, because it is so interesting. It was, of course, created by Lin-Manuel Miranda, who we all know now as the creator of Hamilton. But this is what he started as, like, a little baby in college. And he was a sophomore in college when he wrote the earliest draft of this musical. You're a sophomore in college. What are you doing?
Not writing musicals. Oh, my God.
Brutal. But, yeah, and of course, I think the original version of it was a lot different. I actually, I will link this in the show notes because I find it fascinating, but the podcast Broadway Backstory did a really in-depth look in the history of In the Heights and the creation of it. And the original version of it had a very different plot line. Nina and Menny were always, like, their plot line always kind of existed. But originally, Usnavi was more of a background character, and the main character was, I don't remember his name now, but he was gay, and a large part of the musical revolved around him being closeted and in love with Benny, who was his best friend, and sort of the complications that came from that. And Lin actually said in an interview is they thought this was, like, a really interesting thing that they were doing, but then they were like, that story's been done before. And they're like, what are you talking about? And then they were like, let me take you to a show. And they took them to Avenue Q, where it's basically that exact plot line. I mean, played more for comedic effects than I think would have been done in this show, but he was like, you're right.
Yeah.
And I think the show was already evolving past at that point anyway, but that really shifted and, like, put different ideas to the forefront. It's very interesting. I don't know what this would look like with that original storyline, but it's certainly very different from how the show ended up.
Yeah, it definitely is.
And, of course, also in this show, he collaborated with Tommy Kail, Alex Lacamoire, and Annie Blankenbuehr, which ended up being the dream team that also went on to develop Hamilton. So the moral of the story is make friends with Lin-Manuel Miranda 10 years ago, and then you'll be rich today.
Basically, yeah.
Do you remember who was in the cast of In the Heights when we went to see it?
You mean Christopher Jackson?
Okay. Riley's in love with Christopher Jackson.
I'm a little bit in love with Christopher Jackson.
I mean, it's not that he's not great, because he really is, but just of all the options, I'm surprised it's Christopher Jackson.
He's, I love him.
Why?
He's got such a beautiful voice. And he always, you know, whenever he performs, it's always 110%. And he's just great, you know. Cool guy.
See, I'm a David Diggs girl.
All right.
Are you a Christopher Jackson person or a David Diggs person? This is a personality test now.
Oh, yeah.
But yes, Chris Jackson was in the cast. Manny Gonzalez was in the cast. Lin-Manuel Miranda was not. We went to see it after he had already left.
Yeah, but his Javier was.
Well, yes, Javier was playing the part of Usnavi when we went, but he was not in. His understudy was in when we went to see him.
Oh, his understudy? Oh, right, because we went for the matinee.
Yeah, we went to, found our old playbill and found this all out, because now we know who all these people are. We did not at the time. We were like, this is cool. What a good show.
Yeah.
This is also, Riley did not know this. I just revealed this to her this morning and blew her mind, but she did not remember this apparently. When we went to see this musical, we had tickets in the very last row of the Richard Rodgers Theater. What a place to be. And we brought binoculars.
I can't believe we did that.
It was definitely our mom's idea.
I 100% believe it was mom's idea.
Yeah. And it was, like, it's not a bad idea. So you could put the binoculars up to your face and you could get close-ups.
Yeah.
But what? Why did we do that?
Probably she just wanted to make sure that we could see the stage.
I mean, I just have a very distinct memory of, like, putting the binoculars up to my face and seeing Christopher Jackson and Manny Gonzalez doing their duet, you know?
I remember there being a group of high schoolers in front of us and them being really annoying through the whole show.
Wow, that's your memory?
Well, I mean, it's not my whole memory, but that's sort of my memory about, like, where we were sitting.
Genuinely, that, like, looking at them doing that duet is through the binoculars is my only real memory of seeing it.
Oh, wow. I have some memories of looking at the set and seeing Abuela come out for her song. So I remember that, and I remember the bit in the finale after the gate comes down.
I remember the gate coming down.
Yes.
Yeah. Woo. That's actually like a out-of-context spoiler, you know?
Yeah. Well,
it's like it's not a spoiler because you have no idea what it means.
Yep.
Well, let's just get right into it, you know? Let's talk about this musical.
All right.
I'm starting with the first number, In the Heights, which I think is one of my favorite opening numbers of any Broadway show.
It's a really great opener.
Lights up on Washington Heights, up at the break of day, I wake up.
I mean, and I got the, you know, it's always good to start with a name. Just really establish yes. The name of your show really firmly.
It's also great because as it goes through, it does an introductory of all of the major characters in the show as well. It gives a little backstory about who they are and their situation and how they all know each other.
It's like exposition, the song.
Yeah.
It is, though, but it's also, so it's almost 8 minutes long. And it really is, you get the full cast of characters pretty much, except Nina.
Yes, she's mentioned briefly, but not introduced because she's not actually technically there yet.
Yeah, and the whole thing is narrated by Usnavi, who is the bodega owner.
Yep.
And it's just kind of rolling through. I am Usnavi. This is another anecdote for the show is, in our lives, is there's a line in this song where he's talking about how to get to In the Heights, where he's talking about how to get to Washington Heights, and he says, "You must take the A train even farther than Harlem, north of Manhattan, and maintain, get off at 181st
and take the escalator.
I hope you're writing this down. I'm gonna test you later." And then, you know, and I used to do this program in New York City where we actually stayed in an apartment in Washington Heights, and I actually did get off at 181st Street and take the escalator. Man, I did this 4 years in a row for 2 weeks of the year, and every single time I got off that escalator, I just heard Lin-Manuel Miranda's voice in my head. That's his legacy.
Yep. Yeah, I remember you took pictures of it to send to me, and you were like, oh my God.
Yeah, it's just a subway station, but it's very special to me now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also this beautiful song in terms of, like, it really sets it up as a love letter to Washington Heights, but with these stipulations. It's like, look at this really cool place where all these people are, but also it's really difficult to live here, but also, like, we're determined to live here because we love each other. And it sets up the tension of the show really well, I think. Not necessarily the specific plot lines, but you see, like, Washington Heights is as much of a character as it is a setting in this show. And it introduces that character as well as everyone else. And saying, like, here is the tension that we are living in. Like, we are immigrants. We are struggling with money. We are getting by day to day. But we also, like, have this really strong familial connection to each other and to this neighborhood that we live in.
Yeah. Oh, another thing I love that they set up in the beginning of the song is that they all go and buy lottery tickets.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that becomes pretty important later on.
Yeah, there are these references to people buying lottery tickets. And, you know, Usnavi's the one selling everything. It's also like the whole setup of the song is people coming in and out of Usnavi's store at the beginning of the
day. Yeah, it's sort of the opening of the morning and everyone coming in and getting their coffee and getting ready for their day at work.
But after we have this whole bombastic introduction, we move on to Breathe, which is Nina's introduction to the show and her big solo. And this song is so emotional.
It's so emotional.
Nina's off to college, and tuition is mad steep. And so she has chosen to go to Stanford, which is, you know, on the other side of country from New York. So she's home for the first time since she left. And, like, over the course of this song, which is this beautiful solo that she sings with, like, background voices, and she tells the whole story about, like, her life, basically, and being a hugely motivated student. And she feels, like, this whole pressure of her family and the neighborhood, like, because she's the first person who's gone away to college.
Yeah, and so as the story sort of unfolds, she talks about how much she studied in high school and loving it, and then going to college and being so excited. And then there was the pressure of working two jobs and having to take all of the exams and tuition's going up, and she couldn't handle it anymore, and she lost her scholarship because she couldn't study, and then she had dropped out and not told anyone. And so this is her first time home, and now she has to tell all of these people who were so excited for her and so proud of her that she failed them, is sort of how she's talking about it. I smile at the
faces I've known all my life. They regard me with pride, and everyone's sweet. They say you're going places, so how can I say that while I was away, I had so much to hide? Hey guys, it's me. The biggest disappointment, you know. The kid couldn't hack it. She's back. She's walking real slow. Welcome home, just breathe.
So emotional. Riley and I are just staring at each other right now, like dagger eyes. Because this song, I'm going to bring it back to another story that I've heard about the development of In the Heights, which is that Lin-Manuel Miranda brought this show before some producers, and they said, we feel like Nina's story isn't high stakes enough. What if she's pregnant? What if she's addicted to drugs? And they were like, well, that's a horrible idea. And luckily they did not let them do any of that to it and didn't work with those people, because they're like, why do you have to make it into those other things? How is this story not high stakes enough of this young woman from, like, a parent? She's like a second generation immigrant. And she has, like, all of the hopes and dreams of her parents and this entire community pinned on her. And, yeah, of course, that's high stakes enough. I think that's super high stakes. I think that's more high stakes than being pregnant, really.
That's the thing, is, like, I feel like that's something. The only you have to have a complete lack of understanding of what that means to not think that it's powerful enough to drive a story.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think for us, our situation is not the same as that, but there is a certain amount of relatability in that song, in terms of, like, both of us come from a small town where not a lot of people go away to college, and that both of us went out of state for college. There is a similar aspect of that, and I think it's a relatability for a lot of people, which is why it's such a powerful song and a powerful storyline, is kind of, no matter who you are, like, feeling the expectations of your family and of your community, and feeling the need to carry that with you. Like, anything that you do is not just for you, it's for all the people who came before you.
There also seems to be sort of this pressure that while you're away at college, like, you have to seize all the opportunities and do all the things and take all of the classes that, you know, you wouldn't normally think of doing, because of the fact that, you know, you're one of 50 kids in, you know, from your class, and you're the only one who's really been given these opportunities. So it sort of becomes this, a little bit of this pressure to, you have to do it. That wasn't said very clearly, but yeah.
But yeah, it is this idea of, like, if you don't do everything that you're supposed to do, then you are just wasting it. And
yeah,
you know, you're wasting your opportunities. You're wasting.
You're throwing away your shot.
Oh my God, bringing it back.
Bringing it back.
And the whole crux of this song is the understanding not only of those expectations, but just, like, the flat-out knowledge, or, like, the perspective that you have failed and that she had to drop out. And for her, this is, like, everything that she's worked for her entire life seems to have come to a standstill, and she doesn't know where she's going from here. And so for her, it's, like, this worst-case scenario, and she hasn't told her parents yet, and she now needs to, like, face the hardest thing she's doing in her entire life, is to go tell her parents that she's let them down. And it's like, well, I guess I'll just cry forever now. This is the second song in the show, and it's devastating.
It really is. Breathe leads right into Benny's dispatch, because she's going to find her parents, and her dad owns it, and Benny is the person who's currently working there,
otherwise known as your OTP could never.
Yeah.
This is the start of Benny and Nina. Well, it's not the start. It's our, like, introduction to Benny and Nina.
Yes.
Which is, Benny works at the dispatch, the radio dispatch, you start to realize, like, the kind of complicated relationship is that Benny works for Nina's father. He runs the cab company. But Benny is completely in love with Nina, and he's trying to impress her by doing really well on the radio dispatch, which is, like, weird flex, but okay.
Yeah.
Well, check the technique, yo. There's a traffic accident I have to mention at the intersection of 10th Avenue, the Jacob Javits Convention Center. And check it, don't get stuck in the...
I feel like the first seven songs of this musical are really just, like, going bang, 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 and setting up the essential plot aspects that we'll then see play out over the next, it's like 3 days, but like 3 days of plot over the rest of the musical. So you have In the Heights, your basic character introduction, Breathe, which is introduction to Nina, Benny's Dispatch, which is Nina and Benny, It Won't Be Long Now, which serves as our real introduction to Vanessa, as well as her, I'm not even going to say a relationship, the fact that Usnavi's in love with Vanessa. And then you have Yunutil and Nomadika, which are sort of continuations of Nina's plotline, but really, like, other characters' reactions to that, and sets up what's going to happen as a fallout. And then finally, 96,000, which is the real, like, fully inciting incident of the rest of the musical, when they find out that someone has won the lottery.
Woo. Woo. A whole $96,000.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, a lot, but not...
It is. That's the thing. Is, like, it's simultaneously a lot of money and not a lot of money compared to the things they're talking about in the song.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. But let's take some time to break down some of these in detail.
Okay. So It Won't Be Long Now is Vanessa's big solo, sort of her talking about her situation and how she very much wants to, she really wants to leave Washington Heights and go to the West Village and sort of live in a fancier part of New York. And there are a lot of really strong metaphors about her leaving and...
And one day I'm hopping that elevated train and I'm riding away, yeah.
Heard this song as a kid, I didn't, like, I understood what it meant, but I was also like, the train costs like $3.
Yeah.
And then I realized it's a metaphor and she wants to move, not just literally get on the train.
Yes. Yeah, moving costs more than $3, unfortunately.
Moving costs so much more than $3. Also, rent in the West Village costs a lot.
It definitely does.
But I love this song. I think it's a really cool song in terms, like, I listen to the song to kind of pump myself up no matter what I'm doing. But it's also just a beautiful introduction to, like, everything driving Vanessa is, like, to get out of Washington Heights and to build herself a better life, really similar to Nina. And they've very much mirrored them in different ways. But, like, Nina's was through college and Vanessa is just through, like, working her ass off at a job so that she can afford to move. But also just speaking of absolutely devastating songs, in the very beginning of this goddamn musical is Yunutil, which is Nina's father. And if you thought Breathe was bad.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
He starts talking about his childhood. And that is intense.
He'd sit me down beside him and he'd say, my father was a farmer. His father was a farmer. And you will be a farmer. But I told him, puppy, I'm sorry, yeah, I'm going,
it's like,
farther.
It's the other half of Nina's. This is the father's perspective on the situation. And, like, he was like, I came to this country to make a better life for my children. And I have done everything for them. And, well, I guess it's just Nina for child.
Yeah.
And this is, and now I feel like I can't do anything anymore. And I'm useless.
There's a line that he says, I will not be the reason that my family can't succeed. Which, oh my God.
I just want to cry forever.
Yeah.
It's so emotional. And, like, the deep, deep love that this is driven by is so apparent. And also this, it's simultaneously love for Nina, but also...
There's a little bit of an aspect of him feeling sorry for... A little bit feeling sorry for himself that he couldn't do anything, and it's sort of being like, well, I couldn't do anything, so now you're going, like, you have to do better to Nina.
And this is the only thing that matters.
Yeah.
And, like, not like the only thing that matters is that you're able to do this, and you have to do it. This is not optional.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I wonder if that'll have any consequences. But then, of course, we have 96,000, which is just a real banger. Like, this is one of those songs that made us fall in love with In the Heights in the first place.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of fun. It's the song where they find out that Usnavi's bodega sold the winning lottery ticket for a $96,000 lottery.
Yeah, and then they all start dreaming about what they would do with it, which is great. And it's also another chance just to get a more in-depth look in some of the characters. I performed this song in my show choir, and I, for some reason, was given the introductory rap of Benny rapping about how he would go to business school.
Yo, if I won the lotto tomorrow, well, I know I wouldn't bother going on no spending spree. I'll pick a business school and pay the entrance fee. Then maybe if you're lucky, you'll stay friends with me. I'll be
so that exists on YouTube. Ooh, spoiler alert, 96,000 is a really difficult song. There are a lot of parts, and it is very difficult even to get the timing correct. Not, heavens forbid, get the notes correct. Even the timing is so hard.
It's a whole big, all the cast is in it number, and it's one of those ones where if you try to sing all the parts by yourself, you'll just run out of breath about a minute and a half in.
Doesn't stop me, though.
We try our hardest.
It's a very good car song.
Yes, it's a great song for to jam into the car.
And just in case you were having too good of a time, up next is Paciencia y Fe.
Oh man, I love this song.
It's a really beautiful song.
Back as a child in La Vibora, I chased the birds in the plaza, praying mama you would find work, combing the stars in the sky for some sort of sign.
This is where we get our abuela solo, and she gets to tell her life story. A lot of life stories in this musical.
Yes.
That's kind of one of the points.
She's talking about escaping from Cuba mm-hmm. and coming to New York and not having any money and not speaking English and needing a job. And before she even gets to the part of the song, she's has this little bit where she's speaking directly to her mother, sort of as a prayer. And she says to her, what do you do when your dreams come true? I've spent my life inheriting dreams from you. And I always really liked that line. Quinn's starting to cry.
I literally just teared up. Oh my God, I can't handle this musical.
Yeah. It's intense. And then there's a pause and she says, what do I do with this winning ticket?
Abuela won the lottery. She's also not anyone's grandmother in the show, as they mentioned before. Yeah. She's just the collective abuela for everyone.
Yes.
Because you think about, like, all of the characters in this musical, like, the main cast of characters are all, like, 18 to 20.
Mm-hmm.
Which is funny, because that makes them younger than me now. It's very
weird.
Oh,
my God. That is weird.
Yeah. But she was sort of always a community figure for them, and so they all call her abuela.
Yep.
Then now she's won the lottery and she hasn't told anyone.
And then we have When You're Home. That is the line, I used to think we lived at the top of the world when the world was just a subway map.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I remember listening to that one as a child and being like, that's not how maps work. That's not how the earth works.
Well, you also didn't live in New York.
That's true.
So perhaps if you, like, if that's the kind of map that you're exposed to all the time and you see, like In the Heights. That's not the name of the neighborhood. Because, I mean, when you look at the subway map, Washington Heights is the top of Manhattan. And so it does look like you're at the top of the world if that's the whole map that you see.
That's true.
This is a really beautiful song. And it's also, this is, I think, where you get the contrast between the sort of burden of expectations that are put on Nina and, like, the love that Benny has for her. Because he explicitly tells her in this song that he believes in her no matter what, and that, like, it doesn't matter where she is right now, and she's gonna be okay.
Yeah. So please don't say you're proud of me when I've lost my way. Then can I say I couldn't get my mind off you all day? Now listen to me, that may be how.
Well, okay, well, sort of off screen, you find, like, out of the soundtrack, in a spoken conversation, you find out that Nina's dad sold his company to pay for her tuition, and in doing so has you know, Benny has now lost his job. And then it sort of jumps into the club, which is Eustavi and Vanessa are on a date. Benny's there getting drunk. Nina shows up. And everything just sort of explodes.
We've a really beautiful act one closer. Let me tell you, I'm sure I'm on record on this in the show before. I am such a sucker for a good act one closer. And in there, it's the 4th of July in this show. And so they literally, like, all go out to the club. It is wild. There's lots of dancing. It's electric. And then everything blacks out. Like, there's no power. Everyone's panicking. They're trying to get to each other. They're trying to be safe because they're worried about looting and the stores and everything. And then fireworks go off. And they're literally, like, the neighborhood is blacked out. And then everyone's watching the fireworks. Ugh.
And you also, at the end of that song, Usnami runs into Abuela and he's like, oh, what's going on? And she's like, well, the money. And that's when she first tells anyone that she won, is because the blackout happened and she's worried about it getting stolen.
One thing that this song really shows you is, like, who people run to when this dangerous situation happens. It's like, what is your first instinct?
Yeah.
And Usnavi's is to protect Abuela, and Sunny's is to protect the store, and Nina and Betty's is to find each other.
Yeah, and Vanessa is looking for Usnavi, but she can't find him.
Yeah, that is an interesting thing, though, is like, no matter how much Usnavi is totally in love with Vanessa, but, like, when the chips are down, the first thing he does is protect Abuela.
Yeah,
she raised him. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, this is basically... She's like my second mom, you know. I'm going to be there for her.
And then that's the end of Act One.
What an Act One closer. What a time.
Wow.
So, and in just like, I mean, Act Two is also very good, but I love Act One of In the Heights so much. And I feel like every single song on it is incredibly solid. I think that it sets up characters so clearly, but yet complexly. You're able to get the driving motivation of each character, while at the same time, like, understanding how they exist in this really complicated ecosystem of the neighborhood.
Sort of the beginning of Act Two is just everyone the morning after the blackout. So Abuela and Usnavi are talking about the money and what they're going to do with it, who it's going to go to. And then Nina and her parents have this big conversation about going to school and her relationship with Benny in a wonderful song. It's called Enough, and it's a song her mother sings where she basically tells Nina and her father to shut up and listen to each other and have a real conversation for once, instead of just running off and doing things without talking to each other. And then you have Carnival, which is one of my favorite songs.
Let's have a carnaval del barrio.
Basically, they all get together and are just sort of, one of the characters just goes, you know, everyone's so depressed, like, let's just party, you know, why not? It's the 4th of July, we should be celebrating some things. And the beginning of the song is them all teasing each other, and then Usnavi shows up halfway through to announce that Abuela won the money. And the two of them are going to be going to the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, and then Sunny freaks out, and then it's like, no, we're giving you money too. And he was like, oh, okay.
Wait, actually, my favorite line in the show is in this song. Yeah, so Sunny has this whole thing about how, you know, the neighborhood's falling apart and nothing's going to go okay. And then Usnavi says, you know, there's nothing going on here we can't handle. He says, maybe you're right, Sonny.
You're right, Sonny. Calling the coroners. Maybe we're powerless, a corner full of foreigners. Maybe this neighborhood's changing forever. Maybe tonight is our last night together. However, how do you want to face it? Do you want to waste it when the end is so close you can taste it? Y'all can cry with your head in the sand. I'ma fly this flag that I got in my hand.
I think that's just a beautiful celebration of that, because that situation happens a lot where things are changing and they're never going to be the same. And it's sort of like, yeah, this is true. This is unavoidable. But your options are cry about it or celebrate what has happened and the fact that, you know, these people are going on and doing great things with their lives.
It is a really beautiful sentiment, and I feel like that can be applied to almost any transition period in life. One of the things I love so much about this musical is that it is, on one hand, incredibly specific, and every song is immaculately crafted to be about a very specific set of experiences, and specifically telling the story of, like, these young second-generation immigrants in this neighborhood that he grew up in, and, like, is so incredibly personal. But because it is so personal, it resonates on so many different levels. And even though, like, my life experiences are very different, the emotions that come across in these songs are incredibly universal, and then they can be applied to all of these different things, these themes of love and friendship and relationships with your parents and your community and life changing and having to deal with those changes. Like, those are things that everyone goes through and everyone can find a relation to in this music. And then this would be, like, at the point where if you were reading a book, you would be like, it seems like they're wrapping things up, but there are still 100 pages left. Oh, no.
Oh, no, indeed.
Yeah. Abuela passes away.
Yep.
Do we know why? Do they say why?
They, Yusnavia's line, they says a combination of the stress and the heat. And then he makes an allude to that she had a medication that she never took.
It's incredibly sad.
Yes. There are three songs that really talk about it. The first one is just Attention. It just announces it. The second song is Yusnavi telling everyone about it. And then the third song is Nina sort of processing it when they're going through Abuela's things. It's called Everything I Know. It is a song that makes me cry every single time I listen to it. And it's her talking about the memories that she has with Abuela growing up and going to stay with her after she got out of school, and them going over, you know, everything she knew. And oh my God, sob.
Get ready to leave behind everything you know.
The function of Abuela's death in the structure of this musical, I think, is just this magnification of every theme that has already been discussed, because you have, like, this is just a 3-day slice of these people's lives. It's a really pivotal 3 days.
Very.
But her death is kind of the culmination of a lot of things that have already been discussed. And so it's like this really strong connection to the neighborhood and to, like, their heritage was this woman. She was really connected to Nina's schooling growing up and encouraging her. She was really connected to Yusnavi's goals and, like, where he wants to be in his life physically and emotionally. And so when they lose her, it's like this tether has just been cut away. And then the last few songs of the musical, because this really is, like, pretty close to the end, but then the rest of the musical is, like, them settling into it and realizing that they can go on without her, and that, like, that who they are as people can exist, like, even without those things, and that, like, they can still maintain their own goals and their own lives. Or maybe Lin-Manuel Miranda just hates us and wants us to suffer.
I don't quite think that that's it. I think it's definitely something that changes the decisions that very specifically Yusnavi and Nina make, because until that point Nina was kind of fine not going back to school, and then afterwards, and she's doing all this reflection, you know, she says, okay, you know, I'm gonna try this again, I'm gonna do this again.
And the ramifications that are felt by her passing away just lead us right into the finale of this whole musical. Is Yusnavi is still, like, he has this conversation with Vanessa where she's trying to get him to stay, but he's still planning on going to the Dominican Republic. But then his cousin Sonny commissions Graffiti Pete, who's the wildest, randomest character in this musical. But Graffiti Pete makes a mural of her in her honor on the grate of the bodega that they run. And, like, he sees that and he realizes that, like, through this symbol of her, that, like, this is his home. And that the Dominican Republic, while that's where his family is from, and while that's always going to be a really important part of his heritage and his life, that doesn't make it his home. Like, this neighborhood with these people is where he belongs.
He even says, this corner is my destiny.
He sort of accepts this role, as he says, like, of the storyteller.
Yeah.
And keeping along Abuela's legacy.
Yeah. And he talks about sort of being a lamppost stuck in his corner, but he's okay with that. But sort of that, you know, because he's there all the time, he gets to see all these people's lives and hear all of their stories and then get to talk about them and tell them. And wow, this sounds a lot like the finale of Hamilton.
Wow.
It's all about telling people stories and their legacy.
Maybe Lin-Manuel Miranda has an interest in the idea of legacy.
Maybe.
Maybe it's just a little bit. I mean, those are really, like, there's very significant through lines between In the Heights and Hamilton. You have the immigrant story.
Yeah.
You have the idea of legacy, mm-hmm. and how being an immigrant / outsider impacts your legacy and your drive to leave a legacy. You got sad. Real sad.
Yes.
So that's a pretty thorough run through of this show and all the things about it that we love so much and why it makes us so sad all the time and yet so happy. There's really every mood.
Yeah.
This show is a mood.
It's a roller coaster of emotions.
But when I go back to kind of what we were talking about at the beginning, is we first saw this as it was being performed at the 2008 Tonys. They were nominated for 13 Tonys. 13.
13.
That's so many.
It's a lot.
That's, I mean, Hamilton had more because it had the most ever, but like.
It had 16.
Yeah, but that's.
It's only
like,
three more.
13 is very close to the record, especially at the time.
Yes.
But they only ended up winning 4, which is wild to me.
Yeah. Best musical, best original score, and best choreography, as well as.
Best orchestrations. I'm personally mad that they didn't win best book, which is not written by Lin-Manuel Miranda. It was written by Chiara Hudes, who is an amazing playwright. She's a Pulitzer Prize winner for another show that she wrote and is just, like, phenomenal. And for some reason, some show called Passing Strange won Best Book. I don't know anything about this. I had not heard of it before. I assume I saw it at the Tonys at the time. But I just was, like, looking this up, and I was like, Passing Strange? Everybody's going to write in and tell me about how great this musical is. I'm sure it is. I just don't know anything about it. I'm sorry.
I also haven't heard anything about that. They also won the Grammy for Best Musical Show Album.
They did do that.
Yes.
That was pretty cool. But yeah, but I looked it up, and based on the 2008 Tonys, for some ungodly reason, Mandy Gonzalez was not nominated for Best Actress, but I'm still salty about that. But you did get Lin for Best Actor, the people who played Sunny and Abuela in the featured actor and actresses category. None of them won them. Like, all of the acting awards were given to Gypsy that year. And then, like, all of the design awards were given to South Pacific. Which, like, sure. I don't know. I guess they really loved the 2008 revival of South Pacific.
Who knows?
Whatever. But they won the big ones. And they also, like, Andy Blankenbuehler won for Best Choreography. This man has been nominated for Best Choreography at the Tonys for 5 times, and he's won 3 of them.
That's impressive.
He's good at dancing.
But also, the choreography of the show is incredible. There are some really huge dance numbers, especially with, like, the club and Blackout, because, I mean, the whole thing takes place in a dance club. Deserved it.
And it's a real medley of styles, similar as the music. Like, you have more traditional Broadway, you have rap and hip-hop and salsa, and like all of these different things put together, and so the dance in the show reflects that as well. It's sort of like In the Heights was such a groundbreaking show when it first came out for the type of music that it was, and the way that it, like, melded together English and Spanish, and it was this just incredible performance overall. And now it feels almost like old news, because it's like, yeah, Hamilton.
Yeah.
Like, this hip-hop musical about the founding fathers of America. Obviously, In the Heights also, like, has that kind of music. But at the time, that was not the mainstream smash that it was. It was, like, a super interesting, independently developed show that was, it was a miracle that this existed, but it did, and it was beautiful. Revive In the Heights.
That would be incredible.
I know it was on Broadway less than 10 years ago, but revive In the Heights.
They did a Spring Awakening revival. Why not?
Well, yeah. I mean, that was the Deaf West production, though.
That's true.
They could do a Deaf West production of In the Heights.
Yeah.
That'd be dope.
Be awesome.
In conclusion with all of this, I would really like to recommend not only the Broadway Backstory episode about In the Heights that I recommended previously, but also the PBS documentary about the creation of In the Heights.
I love the documentary about In the Heights.
We've seen it like 3 times.
It's such a good documentary.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. And it has all this footage of them in the process of creating it for Broadway. Including at one point, there's a shot of them working at the table, and it's like Lin-Manuel Miranda, Tommy Kail, and Kiara Hudes, like sitting around the table. And do you know how many sitting at that table now, like 10 years later, that's 2 Pulitzer Prizes, like 15 Tony Awards, who knows, a MacArthur Genius Grant, several Grammys. Like, it's just ridiculous the number of accolades that are sitting at that table only a few years away from that success, and they had no idea.
It's incredible. One of my favorite scenes of the documentary is when they're putting up the posters for the first time. And for those of you who don't know, the album artwork is this big image and all of the characters are, around it. It's sort of a shot of the opening scene. So there's this, so Graffiti Pete is sort of in the middle of it all. And the actor who played him was just walking down the street one day and he was like, oh, I'm so excited. Like, they're about to put the poster down, and it drops, and it's this 10-story poster of him. And he, like, drops to the ground and, like, calls his mom. And he's like, oh, my God. And, oh, my, yeah. It's such a wonderful moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the video of him dropping to his knees and calling his mom is, like, the only thing you need to watch to be inspired for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful. In conclusion, In the Heights should have won way more Tonys than it did, but we're glad it was so successful and that it led to the beautiful creation of Hamilton. And it's also now available to be performed locally. And, like, I've seen a college production of it, and I know it's out there in the world. So go see your local production of In the Heights. It's awesome.
It's so good.
So we're going to finish out our episode today with the traditional lightning round. So, Riley.
Yeah.
Favorite song?
Everything I Know.
Favorite line?
The one from Carnival. I already said it.
Yeah, you already read it. Okay. Favorite character?
Abuela.
If you could play a character in it, who would you want to play?
Graffiti Pete.
Okay. Not where I was expecting that to go.
It's a fun little character.
Who would you recommend go see this show specifically?
I think anyone who is sort of 16 to or older, I don't know, but like the college age range, I think is a really good, it's a really good show to see. And anyone from a small town.
Mm-hmm.
Or a really close-knit community or something like that.
And finally, if you could combine this show with one other, which would you pick and why?
Oh, man. My first thought was Rent.
That was also my first thought.
Yeah, because they're both shows about a group of, like, friends in New York just trying to, you know, live their lives and make something happen and just, you know, survive basically at the basis of all of it. So yeah, I think that would be an interesting combination.
Yeah, I could see that. Well, considering how, like, Jonathan Larson is an explicit inspiration for Lynn, I'm sure that there were deliberate parallels that could be found there.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, cool. That concludes the lightning round, which means that concludes this episode. Thank you for talking with me, Riley.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Corner of the Sky. You can find us online at theincomparable.com/COTS or follow us on Twitter at COTS Podcast. Also, if you're listening to this the day that it came out, the Tonys are tomorrow. As usual, I'll be live tweeting the ceremony from the podcast account, so make sure to follow that if you want all of my thoughts. It's mostly screaming and enthusiasm. See you next week.
Benny on the dispatch.
Yo. Okay.